First of all, I wish I could come to you as an expert on marriage and say, oh man, I got all the answers. Here it is. We're going to talk about what I do and just follow me and it's easy. But that is not the case at all. I'm really thankful for the opportunity to have to teach on this because it forced me to read and essentially end up, you know, in this position of just what Sarah said along the lines of marriage. Chip Ingram suggests that marriage is by design meant to be hard to force you to God's presence. And, if I could get marriage down on my own, I would have. And I would have done a long time ago, but I can't. And it does cause you to just rely on God in a way that is in your face every day. And so preparing for this was a good thing for me. I feel like I should have to teach on marriage every week because it is just a constant battle that is worth fighting for. And we have to remember that. But it is. I mean, I can remember being, I was probably, say, 19 or 20 years old. I was working a summer job. I was in college. I was working a summer job in New Jersey. I was painting water towers at Fort Dix. Anyway, it was a weird job. But I was living with, growing up, which would have been like two houses down from me, people that were really close to me. They ended up moving to New Jersey. And so I spent time with them. And at that time, Aaron and I, you know, we had been together since high school. And at this point, we were, you know, getting back together and, you know, the future was on the horizon. And I was using my AT&T calling card and using up all my minutes talking to her long distance. And one time I just got done on the phone and I said to the family, I said, man, relationships are hard. And they just laughed and they just were like, yeah, that's exactly it. That is it. Like, I now know why they're laughing, because they were, you know, 20, 30 years into their marriage, and they were saying, yeah, it's hard. Yep. Enjoy your marriage as you get going, because it's going to continue to be hard. And that's okay. But it requires us to rely on God, to follow God, to put our trust in God. It's that walk, that day-by-day walk that our relationship with God requires in order to love somebody the way He tells us to love them. So I have, what I had done is this. Because we knew that this was going to be fairly lightly attended, I stretched the sermon I was to teach into 2 weeks so I could dig in deeper. So I'm going to go in fairly deep in areas I probably wouldn't have, because I'm going to finish it up next week. Okay, so I'm taking 1 week and turn it into 2 weeks. So next week, if you're at Muncie with us, I'll probably do a quick review, and then we'll get able to finish it, or able to finish. So if this week feels a little unfinished, that's by design, because we're going to finish it next week. And I also know that when I'm done teaching, there are times when I can't even remember what I talked about. So I can't expect you guys to remember. So I made some notes so that everything was covered pretty clearly. In addition to that, everything I have for the next 2 weeks is taken from about three or four books. This first week is primarily based on a book from Les and Leslie Parrott. It says, When Good Things Happen to Bad Marriages. I remember we got this many years ago. And I pulled it out. I pulled all my marriage books out and was rereading them. And there was a lot of good stuff in here that I wanted to make sure you had. It is important to put effort into your relationship. And I'm going to speak mostly to the guys. And we can get lazy in this. And if you don't put effort into it, why would you expect anything to be different than what it was, you know, the week or the month or the year before? It's up to us to have these books It's up to us to pull these books out and highlight them and reread them. And they're, you know, a $20 book may only give you one or two pieces of wisdom that you would apply to your marriage. But, you know, in the reality, that's worth it. $20 is worth it to be a step closer to where God wants you in your marriage. So I just, you know, I'm going to mostly focus on guys and our responsibility. That's because I'm not stupid. I mean, right, I'm going to get up here and talk to women, like what they need to do in the marriage. Oh, my goodness, come on. Anyway, so I'll pass this out. You can, when I hear Bob will pass those out. He likes notes, so he'll pass those out for me. And so the other thing is this. My PowerPoints would have been just loaded with quotes from books, and I didn't want that. And, you know, the general rule is PowerPoint isn't supposed to be full of lines of information. So I tried to do the PowerPoint the correct way. Tristan, can you go ahead and do it? Okay, so where we're at in the marriage series is after 7 years. So, you know, what's marriage look like after 7 years? What can we apply to after 7 years? And the first thing is that 7 years is sometimes referred to as people getting the 7-year itch. And I know this is small. I just did a copy off of a Wikipedia page. And just to show you that, indeed, divorce is highest around the 7-year period, interestingly enough. And that has existed over the last 30, 40 years, that somewhere around 7 years is the most likelihood, or someone's most likely to be divorced. And, you know, it's interesting reading secular articles. They're like, well, you know, you kind of just get tired of the person by then and you're ready to move on. Just kind of like you're ready for a new job. You might be ready for a new spouse. You know, what's the big deal? So there is a lot, if you're around to 7 years, that you need to be aware of. And I think the points that we go through today, you'll see why the 7-year may be a time where people give up. Okay? So like I mentioned, and it's in your paper there, that this is based on this book. And the other two books I'll mention as we go on. All right, go ahead. So this addresses this idea of why do bad things happen, especially the title of the book, why do bad things happen to good people or to good couples? Okay, what are some reasons that bad things are going to occur? And I really like number one. I mean, I could spend days on number one because Aaron and I recognize that this was an issue in our relationship. Many of our fights that we had, or I'm sorry, discussions that we had, I'm a Christian, I don't fight. Many of our fights were on unfulfilled expectations. And again, I can see why around the 7-year, because, you know, I think the typical pattern is you wait a couple years before you have children, and then you start having children, and after 7 years in, you have one or two little ones, and life becomes really difficult. And the biggest issue that we had was unfulfilled expectations. Just a real quick glimpse into our lives, and that would be Aaron has been with the kids all day. I had been working all day. I would come home and be like, I can just finally relax and maybe just sit down. And she looked at me pointing in the driveway as, finally, I can have a break. I can sit down. And I'm like, what have you done all day? I'm the one who's been working. Why do you need a break? And she's like, you know, I have these little kids. What are you talking about? Your job's easy. You only have 20 and they're bigger. And, you know, you're not changing diapers. But you didn't verbalize this. The idea was I came home and I'm like, you know, she'd walk out and I'm like, why do I have these kids? What is happening here? There was never any communication is the bottom line. And this book talked about a couple of good examples of unfulfilled expectations. And this couple was sharing a story how this woman was they were newly married, and she was sitting down to lasagna dinner, or to the dinner that she had made, which was lasagna, and as they were eating it, she began to cry. And he's like, what's going on? Why are you crying? And finally she came out and said, you know, we used to make lasagna together. Now you just come home, and I have to make it by myself. And the point is, unfulfilled expectation. Her expectation was, we will always make lasagna together. It's just going to be so fun because when they're dating, they did lasagna. So when we get married, we'll have hours to make lasagna together. And so she's sitting there crying over lasagna, and he's like, what is going on? Okay, that's an unfulfilled expectation. This is another one that I thought was funny. That's a baseball card. That's Johnny Bench, for those of you guys who remember, number 5 catcher for the Cincinnati Reds. And I used to have that exact baseball card, and we used to use clothespins to put them in our bikes, the spikes, to make lots of noise. I mean, I went through probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to make that sound because those cards are worth so much money. But anyway, it was a cool sound. So this story was, this couple was on their honeymoon, and this girl was just like, so she didn't have a father in the home, so she had a lot of expectations for what a marriage was going to look like, and it was going to be a lot of romance and a lot of just time spent together snuggling and just a lot of fun things that, you know, he'd bring her flowers all the time. She just had a lot of expectations. And their very first morning waking up from their honeymoon, he was on an info channel buying baseball cards that he was going to have delivered to his house because he collected cards and he thought it was neat. And she woke up and saw him in the process of buying these baseball cards thinking, "What? Who did I just marry? Like, this is our honeymoon and you're buying baseball cards." And his thought was, I don't want to disturb her. She's sleeping. There's a good deal. I'm going to buy them because I like it. It's a win-win. And anyway, she was just crushed. So they still have these baseball cards and they laugh at him now and think of how he bought them the morning, their first morning together. So I think that unfulfilled expectations, again, this is where we have to be students. We have to be learning about each other. And I forget the guy's name who wrote this book. Chapman? Yeah. Where did you say? Oh, yeah, there it is. Gary Chapman. If you've probably heard of this book, you know, pull it out and look at it again. There's the 5 love languages where unfulfilled expectations really go around how is love spoken to you. And you know, you need to be aware of your spouse. What speaks love to them? And you need to also communicate with your spouse. What are those things that speak love to you? And if you read the book, you know that it could be boiled down into 5 categories, which are words of affirmation, where words are what mean most to you, speak the most love to you. It could be acts of service is a way in which love is spoken. Could be receiving a gift. Doesn't matter how big it is. Some people, if they just get anything, could be a pack of gum, that makes their day. That's how love is spoken to them. Quality time, they just want you to sit and be together. Or physical touch is another way in which love is spoken. So again, to fulfill these expectations, we need to know what they are. And by 7 years, you better know how to communicate what expectations you have and know your spouse's expectations. And this never ends. Okay, this is a constant work to learn these expectations. All right, so moving on. And there's the notes there. I'm not really even, maybe I'll read them. Okay, second one. Unexamined selves. So Plato says, the unexamined life is not worth living. And if you don't take time to look in to yourself, I'm not talking about New Age look to find, you know, the light in you. I'm talking about examining yourself as the Bible would have you examine. It's easy to see how you can look over things. Like, for example, Aaron will say I can be arrogant and prideful, and I think she's crazy for saying that. That's making her point more real, right? I don't see it. Like, when I'm with people, she's like, I can't believe how arrogant you are. I was like, what are you talking about? And, I mean, the reality is, I'm sure she's right. She's not, like, making it up. She's not like, let's think of ways to try to make Brad look stupid. Okay? She's just saying it as she sees it. And so I need to be aware of those things. And there's no one better to tell me the areas that I need to improve than someone who is with me as much as she is. And again, she's not saying it to put me down, but it's quick to receive it. You can be quick to receive it that way. Okay, another thing that, so an exercise associated with this would be, instead of waiting for your spouse to come and be telling you these things, is to go to your spouse and ask, where are areas that I can improve? What would make me a better spouse? And be ready, though. It might be some hard things you hear. I'm just guessing that it might come out that way. But anyway, next is not the blind self, but the hidden self. Okay? So again, these are ways in which marriage can go bad. Go ahead, next thing once. An example of something that would be hidden would be like sexual abuse that has happened in the past, which is extremely prevalent. Okay, it's sad and shocking. And if you look at how that applies to hidden self, your notes say, everything that is known by you and not your spouse. Okay, those are those hidden things. And it says, if she knew the real me, some people believe that that person would never love you then. In short, we can oftentimes be afraid of rejection. Okay, so we hide those things. And this is part of that unexamined self. You're either not aware or you're aware and you don't share. And these can cause a lot of problems in a marriage. Okay, think about that. So unfulfilled expectations, unexamined self. And I think this third one is something that we're really trying to help people with. And that is just being unskilled in certain areas. Okay. I started off talking about how we really need to be proactive. A great relationship isn't going to happen on its own. It takes a tremendous amount of work. In your notes, it says, every marriage has a deficiency. The number one cause for marriage, according to Kansas State University, is money issues. Money management. Okay? And that is something that can be solved, right? It's just for the most part, it can just be laziness. It can be an unwillingness. It could be pride. It could be a number of things that cause us not to become skilled in those areas that we have deficiencies. Tristan, is that so? We offered Dave Ramsey financial peace in church a couple. I guess it was last summer. I'm not sure when it was. In the past. We have those DVDs. If you are having trouble with money, we have resources for you to help you budget and learn to get on top of money. Because money issues is a huge source of problems in relationships. Okay? Become skilled in it. Don't let it go by to the point where the marriage ends up dissolving because of it. There could be other areas where it says, sexual tension, okay, all kinds of sexual issues, problems with in-laws, unbalanced workload, conflict resolution. Okay. The idea is if it wasn't for this one bad thing, everything else might seem good. And it says, experts have found that a majority of couples could significantly improve their marriage by simply learning one new skill for better handling their major deficiency. Are you a learner? Okay, guys, YouTube has everything on it. Okay, whatever your deficiency is, I'm not saying everything's good that's on YouTube, but you can find someone who's good. You don't even have to read anymore. And I found this out. I'm watching this one guy lately. He's good. I like him. But he talks kind of slow. And I read the comments that said, you can speed it up to 1.5 speed. It's beautiful. So now the 30-minute talk is down to like 20 minutes. I love it. Okay, so watch the talks. Speed them up if you don't have enough time. But you need to become a learner. Okay, we have deficiencies. Another book I would recommend, I've talked about it many times, Seven Habits of Highly Effective Families. There may only be one habit in here that would be of use to you. But do you know what the seven habits are? Are you learning these? Again, or are you just hoping for the best? Okay, because it's not going to work. Okay, bad things will happen. And one of the reasons could be someone, one of us, or both of us are unskilled in an area. Have to become learners. All right. Fourth one, unhealthy choices. So I like this idea. It says, the choices we make form the rudder that directs our marriage journey. Okay, so for example, choosing to keep information from your wife. Okay, let me give you an example. Go ahead. So there's a deer head. I don't think I'll ever forget this day. And that was, it was a young guy. He had just gotten married. I was in the faculty lounge. And he was, I think we were all sitting there, or I came in during the conversation. But essentially, here's the gist of the conversation. That was, he shot a big deer that year. And he wanted to mount it. But his wife would never agree to it. Because they're a young couple, they're financially, they don't have the money to do it. And the other guy sitting in the faculty lounge said, "What, dude, don't you know you have your separate account? You got to keep the money. You got to have your own stash. So that when you get the big deer, you mount it and she doesn't know anything about it." He's like, "Oh, okay." Listen, that's really, really bad advice. Okay? What that is, that falls right under unhealthy choices. Okay, it seems like a little thing. Like, I just wanted to get my deer mounted. What's the big deal? I still love you. No, it is a big deal. Because this sets the projection for where your marriage is heading. Okay, the whole idea that the railroad track that's off 3 feet, you know, in Pennsylvania going to Florida ends up in New Orleans if it's off just a couple feet, okay, maybe an inches. All right. So the choices we make matter. It says, look at that second point. It says, regardless of how insignificant a choice may seem at the moment, it is bound to direct our steps towards something, here it is, that either enriches or diminishes our relationship. Are your choice? Think about your choices. They can basically go to two categories, enriching or diminishing. There's very little neutral ground in a relationship. Okay? And again, this is another area where I'm just like, you know, I constantly need work. Are all my choices, are they enriching? Are they to benefit? Now, remember, I'm not talking about enriching to you. Okay? That's by default, that's where my choices go. It's enriching to my spouse. That's what I have to think about. All right. The last one is unpredictable circumstances. So the idea is this. Even if you've done everything right, it doesn't protect a good marriage from going bad. It could be a number of things that are completely out of your control. It could be, you know, a business that all of a sudden gets sued and you're upside down financially and you had, you know, no way you could have prevented that. It could be an illness in the family. It could be a child that chooses to rebel. There's, you know, it's out of your control. Okay, that's going to put you in a situation where a good marriage could quickly become bad. You know, so are you, in a sense, preparing yourself for those moments? Because they're going to come. Okay, there's going to, you know, our goal in going through marriage isn't to prevent anything bad from happening to you. Okay, that's not the Christian life. But what we're trying to do is where we can prevent bad, prevent it, but also prepare us for when the bad does happen, we can most effectively manage it. I'll never forget a line out of a movie, and I've shared this before with you guys. And I think of this as the father, as the husband. This is how you need to approach your life. It was these Navy SEALs it was based on a true story. It was crazy, their lives. You know, they're going back and forth to the Middle East on these crazy missions. They go down to South America. They're going everywhere. And they were in America for a little bit. And there were like five or six guys that were in this unit. And the leader gets them together and he's like, hey, he goes, just so you guys know, get everything in order because we may be gone. And he went through a list of things to do. He's like, make sure everything's in order with your relationship with your wife, with your finances, with your kids. He's like, get it in order because you don't know what's going to be over the horizon. And these guys have that sense of urgency. Like, they can't be like, I'll worry about doing a budget later. I'm tired right now. No, because they're heading out. They could get the call at 4 in the morning, get on a plane, we're heading out. Okay, we could be getting the call at 4 in the morning too, that something really bad just occurred. And if our lives are upside down, we can't serve the best we could possibly serve in that situation. Now we're the victims. So the reason I think it's important that we just become as prepared as we can is not to avoid bad things, but it's to be as effective as we possibly can when those bad things occur. Okay? So again, I don't want you to think we're, you know, this group of self-help where we just want the good life. Okay? We want the life where we can be used most by God. And if our relationships are upside down, our finances are upside down, if everything's screwed up, we cannot be as effective. And we can't be in a position to be used by God, but instead, we have to be, like a drain on people. Okay? All right, let's go through. I'm just going to do these next three things. I had a lot more, but we'll just do these next three. Okay. So good things that can turn bad or turn a marriage bad. Okay, so these are good things. So we get into marriage because the idea of intimacy sounds like a great thing. Okay? And especially when you're dating, you're like, man, I just can't wait till we just have our own place and we can just be together and it's going to be really good. You know, just me and you. Yes. Okay? Well, the good part that I have mentioned there is we long to belong to another person that knows us and loves us like nobody else in this world. Okay, we were made for relationships. Okay, we've talked before about marriage and how it is that special, unique relationship. The bad thing is marriage causes us to submit to the humility of being known in all our phoniness and pride, in all our frailty and the blackness of our sin. And who cares really to be known that well by another person? That's where intimacy becomes a problem. Where you're like, man, now they really know me. And the real me isn't nearly as pretty as the fake me when we were dating. And again, after about 7 years, there's no more hiding who you are. And that's where you're either going to alter your life, God working in it, submitting, humbly going to Him, letting Him transform you, or you're going to walk your life independent of God. All right, but intimacy can become that good thing that really can cause a problem. This is a slide. It was an interesting, it was based on cell phone use and all this other stuff, like Facebook and stuff. But listen to this quote. I know you can't really see it, but it's really fascinating because it really, I think, is this idea of a marriage, intimacy. It says this: as more data is produced and collected from her, the more naked and exposed she will become. Right? That's really what a marriage is. They're talking about the cell phone. Like every website you visit, it's being collected, and they know more and more about you. And so some people are starting to dawn on them that, wait a minute, they know everything about me. And it's starting to, you know, freak people out. And I'm saying that's exactly what happens in a marriage. There's more and more data being collected about you, right? Every day you're seeing your spouse. And what's happening is you're becoming more and more exposed for who you really are. You know, that idea of a phony. You know, we all kind of put a mask on, right? Remember that True Faced video we watched? It was very interesting, this idea of kind of this facade that we'll put up. Well, your spouse knows your facade, and it can become a bad thing. Second one, when babies become a burden, okay? So the good part is having a child is a blessing from God. We're not going to sit here and talk about how negative children are because they are a blessing. But the bad thing is the birth of each child signals a serious and permanent alteration in your marriage, right? I mean, nothing is the same the day you bring that baby home. It is a brand new game, right? And then you sit around and think about, I can't believe I used to think my life was tough, you know, before you had kids. And you're out, and then you bring the second one home or the third one home. You're like, I can't believe we thought one was hard, right? Okay, so babies are a good thing, but they can easily become a bad thing. Go ahead. Studies show that after a child is introduced into a home, conflict is times eightfold. Okay? It becomes very difficult to become or to be on the same page. And for me, I think it's a lot to do with that point number one. What did we say number one was? What is it? Unfulfilled expectations. Okay, I from my experience, that's exactly where it was. Okay, because we start having these expectations from each other to help out, and they aren't being done. And you know, even when the babies become bigger, you know, like when you're in the middle of changing poopy diapers, you're like, man, if we just get through that life, I mean, how can it? It's got to be better. But you know, I'm starting to get on the other end of that and see that you would hear older couples say, there's fewer problems, but sometimes the pit problems are a lot bigger than what you had to deal with. Like they would take a poopy diaper is what I'm getting at. Because the issues can become really large. So it causes you and your wife a lot of potential problems. Okay, because it could involve a lot of resources from you, a lot of time, a lot of energy. And if you guys are not on the same page about your children, it's a nightmare, right? It is an absolute nightmare. It says, I like this too. It says, after the first birthday, 70% of wives have a decrease in marital satisfaction. And then essentially it says men follow because their wives are so miserable that they end up becoming miserable. To them, it didn't dawn on them that they should be miserable, but they see their wives miserable. They're like, yeah, this is becoming difficult. Okay, it takes us a little longer to figure out the issues. Now, I think this is worth talking about. Why? Why does a baby cause eightfold increase in conflict? And I'll read the quote there. It says, in plain language, children take time and attention away from the marriage. Okay? It shows the importance of not stop being companions just to be parents. Okay, this is another area where Aaron and I made a mistake. Okay, I thought this whole idea of dating your wife while your kids were little was the dumbest idea I've ever heard. I was like, let's just raise kids. We love each other. That's stupid. Okay, well, I was wrong on that one. I mean, yeah. Okay, so let me give you some wisdom on that. It's really important that you don't stop being companions to be parents. Okay? It is essential that you get somebody you really, really trust to watch the kids so you go and do something with your spouse. Again, I thought that was stupid, but it isn't. Okay? And I need to make some improvements on that right now. I mean, now the kids can stay home, and I need to make sure I get more consistent about doing stuff with my wife. Now it's like, man, I don't really want to spend $12 to go out to eat or whatever, but you have to do it. I eat cheap. We get...
That may be your problem right there.
Well, here's the trick to it. One, I always grab something to eat before I go out to eat. Two, you don't get drinks, just get water. Okay, and it cuts the bills down. Anyway, it's part of being a school teacher. Lawyers don't understand this burden I carry. Anyway, it didn't even hit. All right, so, yeah. But again, another practical area. You know, you got to think about, and again, I think the burden's on the guy. Okay, it's the burden is on us. And in the whole next section, I'm going to look at this biblically, why I keep saying this. I'll just give you a quick preview of why I feel like we can come at that from that position. And that is the command given by God is for man to love his wife as Christ loved the church. And we were watching a DVD series on this in our house church, but I also did some research on this. And you see some really interesting things, how Christ goes about loving us. And that is how we are to go about loving our spouse. For example, Christ initiates, we respond. Okay? So the husband, in the same way that Christ pursues us, we need to be pursuing our spouses. It is not her job. It is the guy's job. Okay? It is the guy's job to pursue, to initiate, and to love in a way that is much different than we see socially. So I'll dig much deeper on that next week, but that's why I'm saying it's guy's responsibility. Okay, and the last point is number three, when sex becomes a thing of the past. So the point here is couple's sex life starts good, obviously, or typically good, and can sometimes turn bad. Not always, but there is that potential. So the idea here is says steer clear of blame, shame cycle, where you blame the one person, and then that puts shame on the other person. And there's some real practical help for that as far as how to go about it. So let me just get to this part, where it says research shows that a person's hormonal levels is more responsible than previously thought. Okay, so I teach AP biology, and one of the things we go over is the uterine ovarian cycle of a female. There you go. Tristan knows, he was in my AP class, so he could tell you all about those hormones and how there's negative and positive feedback going on and everything that's going on with developing a follicle and a corpus luteum and all this stuff. Okay, so whenever I put this graph up there, I talk about this little fact. If you would put a graph up for guys, it'd be testosterone. Okay? We put this graph up, and this is only a partial graph of what's going on, and you see this, and it really starts to, like, these teenage boys are like, oh, I'm starting to get it now, okay, because it affects a female, okay, in a lot of different ways, all these different hormones that are going up and down. In addition to that, what they have found is that for some women, there's more than one hormone, but I'll say estrogen and testosterone. Actually, females have testosterone, believe it or not. And that a low level of that could be responsible for oftentimes a lack of interest in sex. Okay? So it's more, the reason I talk about that is because it's more than just she doesn't want to be with you. It could be that. Okay? But it might not be just that. All right? So what do you do about it? Okay, so if you read this, it says, the second line there says, so a spouse isn't trying to punish the other one, it might be a hormone issue. Okay, because oftentimes it can be used as a tool for punishment. Okay, but it isn't hopeless. So then it goes through, and it ultimately gets to this. Go to the next slide. You know, a calendar might not be a bad thing. And it talks about actually, you know, kind of making appointments for this opportunity to, where it says there, discuss what kind of sexual emotional activity that would feel most loving and satisfying. And, you know, in high school, I'll give you some insight to how you may have thought at one time and how you may still be in that position. Okay, let me just tell this quick story. So I remember part of that ovarian cycle, we talk about a test to indicate when a female is ovulating, and you know the spike in LH, which is a luteinizing hormone, can be indicated on this test, and then you know that she's ovulating, and then that's the best time to try for pregnancy, blah, blah, blah. Well, this one girl, innocently enough, she's like, well, why do you need to know when you're ovulating? Like, if you're getting pregnant, she's like in her mind, she was like, when you get married, don't you just have sex every day? Is essentially what she was getting at. She's like, why do you need this little kit? Like, you just, every day, right? Like, so anyway, the point is, you know, that may be where you started off marriage. 7 years in, you know, that's probably not the reality of how things are working. Okay? In light of that, that's where this idea of literally scheduling these opportunities may be extremely valuable. Again, a high school person doesn't have any idea what we're talking about. The rest of us are like, calendar, that makes sense. Okay? So I'm just saying you may want to do that. Okay? Especially if you have little kids in the house or things like that where it starts to become, really difficult. Because here's the deal. You don't want to be in a situation where, like number three says, sex becomes a thing of the past. Okay? There's no need for that. All right. It's a really odd place to end. But I'm going to do it. Let me just say this. I want to come back to... So I gave you some practical things. I wanted this sermon to be as practical as any of them have been to this point. In other words, here's some nuts and bolts on how to go about trying to love your wife or your husband well. Okay? So I wanted it to be as practical as I could. As I said, next week, I'm going to really address this idea of loving your wife as Christ loved the church and really think about what that means. And I'm also going to address, I'm going to use the book that Kirk had talked about. I'm going to pull out some points for the love and respect idea. Husbands loving their wives, okay? Wives respecting their husbands, and how that cycle of unloving and disrespectful needs to be broken. And so we'll get even more practical, but much more biblical in the sense of using actual passages next week. So I'm going to go ahead and pray for us, and we'll continue on. God, thank you for loving us. And, it almost quickly gets me emotional thinking that that is the love I'm to have for my wife. And, it's easy for me to want to, have all my sins overlooked and to, always be loved, and I'm not that bad of a guy, but how quick I am to withhold that to my wife. So anyway, thank you for loving us that way. Pray that we become more like you so that we can love in a way that you desire us to love, which is beyond our ability. And I believe Chip Ingram may be onto something where he says, we can't do this hard relationship on our own. But with you, with your Spirit working in us, with your word, with prayer, with community, I believe we can get much closer to what it is you desire for us. Pray you help us so that we get there. In Christ's name we pray.